they say, 'cause we don't want your broken hearts. I've learned to be ashamed of all my scars. Run away, they say, 'cause no one will love you as you are. But I won't let them break me down to dust. I know that there's a place for us, for we are blue.'" This is me. Look out, 'cause here I come. And I'm marching on the beat I drum. I'm not scared to be seen. I make no apologies. This is me.
First of all, as always, it is great to be with you. It is great to recognize and celebrate this thing that we call life, this thing that we call spirit, this thing that we call God. And it's great to do it with you. So thank you for having me back, and thank you for allowing me to be part of Anderson Month. So as that song just introed us into today's talk title is Boldly Living Like Never Before. And that's sort of, you know, my Trekkie thing, like to boldly go where we have never gone before, to boldly live in ways that we have never lived before. But if we're really going to go there, like if we're really going to go there, then we have to explore this idea of, well, what is living? Like, what does it mean to be alive? Because if we're going to really live like never before, you know, to live a bold new story per se, then we really want to explore what being alive means. And not being alive the way we typically understand it according to the way the world defines it. However, let's pause for a second and explore the etymology of the word life. According to the Old English, life means to be animated corporally, like your existence has an animation. But we're recognizing that God is life, right? So life must be God living itself as us. Even in the story of Adam, it says God breathed the breath of Ruach, the holy breath of life, and Adam became a living soul, a living being. And so if God is living each one of us, living itself as us, because there is no separation between it and each of us as the individualized expressions of it, then its life is our life. And because it cannot stop, its animation, its forever motion, its forever movement as an evolving, ever expanding force of love and creation itself, then what it is, we also must be. So let's pause and think about some synonyms for life. Growth, creation, vitality, zest, and enthusiasm. So life involves us being creative and being that which grows and being full of vitality and zest and having enthusiasm about this thing. And each of our lives is our story. So etymology of story is some form of connected account, a narration of something that's happening. And there's another, so when we talk about like, there are four stories to that building. There are levels to this thing called life. There are floors spiraling up in consciousness, even though there really is nowhere else to go. There is only that consciousness that is. But for linguistic convenience, we talk about it as in leveling up, spiraling up. So who we were when we were 5 years old and who we are now, it's a different floor, a different level of consciousness. It's still part of the story, but it's slightly different part of the story. The introduction, the body, there are different aspects of story. Chapter 55, chapter 12. Each of these stories has a layer of or a type of blueprint, a template for how we are living our lives. So if we were to sit back and ask, what is the design for my life? Am I basing my life, building my life based upon a blueprint that my parents, that my teachers in high school, elementary school, that a former minister, priest, or nun, that the government, that someone else has determined for me? Or am I doing like the song indicated, I am dancing to, moving to the beat that I drum? I'm not dancing to, moving to, stomping to anyone else's drum. I am the drummer of my own life, and I am the one that sets the tempo. I am the one that crafts the blueprint, right? So our lives are stories. Question is, what genre of story is our life? For example, pick up any book of fiction, television show, movie, and we understand that there are genres. There's drama and comedy and tragedy and mystery and horror and action and suspense. If your life were a book, and it is, what genre does it fall under? Someone is reading your life. You're reading your life. You are exploring your own life. What genre has it been thus far? Having grown up the way I grew up. Having grown up the way I have grown up, there was definitely a time in my life where, yes, it was definitely a horror story. It was a tragedy. And yet, where I am now, it is an action, adventure, kind of, oh my goodness, it borderlines on sci-fi amazement, because 55 years old now, and this is the best I have ever felt in my entire life. Life is delicious and orgasmically beautiful in all aspects, even in the midst of my grief right now, because my mother made her transition Father's Day last year. So even in the midst of the grief, I still feel grounded, anchored, aligned, peaceful, and glorious. Like Leo sang, hallelujah. Like, hallelujah that I get to do this thing called life. So we breathe, recognizing that we have the ability to rewrite, to edit, to craft a bold new story if we are willing. The author Octavia Butler wrote, and she said, all that you touch, you change. Pause and breathe. All that you touch, you change. Whether you touch it with voice, with eyesight, with a hug, with a handshake, whatever it is, all that you touch, you change. And all that you change, changes you. Law of reciprocity, law of circulation. As you sow, so shall you reap. So all that you change, changes you. And the only lasting truth is change, because God is change. And that change that God is ever moving forward. So for example, this pandemic thing happened and there was a lot of talk about, I can't wait until things go back to the way they were before the pandemic. God does not go backwards. God does not drive backwards. God does not, right? Like, life is not lived in reverse. It's only lived forward. So what I cannot wait for, or what I am enthusiastic about, is the new moving forward once pandemic is done. And that's what you're doing with your trip to Governor's Island. You are living forward, not backwards, forward. So everything that we touch, we change. But are we changing it in ways that are life-affirming, God-affirming, love-affirming? Or are we changing things in ways that make people not want to be around us? Changing things in ways that we don't want to be around ourselves? How are we engaging this thing called life, living this thing called life, engaging it, practicing it, demonstrating it? Because everything that we touch, we change, and it returns the favor. So let's talk about, well, Reverend Ray, how do you live a bold new story like never before? How do I engage this thing, like this thing of life, like never before? Well, if you have pen and pad ready and are ready to write stuff down, let's talk about it. First, because it's a blueprint and it's a template, the very first thing you want to do is identify what you desire to experience. What do you want to experience in life? While understanding that life is not about denying sadness, pain, grief, it is not about denying that. It is not about becoming so enlightened, so heavenly minded that you are no earthly good. That's not living. That's denying life. That's denying all of the deliciousness and all of the spices that come with life. Embrace it all. Welcome it all. And then sit with it. But also recognizing that when there is grief, when there is sadness, when there is disappointment, I choose to experience this even while in the midst of that. So even while grieving, I choose joy. And breathe. What is it that you desire to experience? Now, one of the reasons why I talk about experience is because I don't talk about manifesting anymore, or attracting, or creating per se, because they sort of separate us from the energy of what it means to actually experience your magnificence as spirit in human form. So what do I want to experience? Not what do I want to manifest? That's separate. What do I want to attract? That's something outside that I'm bringing to me. What do I want to create? Well, then that's, what do I want to experience? What do I want to feel? What do I want to taste? What do I want to enjoy in this thing called life? That's first, identify the desire. Raymond Charles Barker said, all creation starts with desire. God desired self-expression, and the cosmos was born. The desires of your heart are the possibilities that can be manifested in your experience. What do you desire? Number two, identify what is currently prohibiting, blocking, denying that experience. What beliefs are you holding? What past experiences, memories, traumas, what people, what situations are currently inspiring you to tell the same story? Well, Reverend Ray, you know that when I was five, X, Y, and Z. Well, that was then. What are you choosing now? Because for as long as we cling to that, we are anchored to that five-year-old experience, and it blocks and denies a certain level of self-care in this moment. It denies a certain level of self-expansion, divine magnificence, because I am bound by the confines of whatever that past paradigm or belief is. It's misattributed to Einstein, but someone once said that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing repeatedly while expecting different results. Am I doing the same thing? Am I singing, row, row, row your boat gently down the stream, but I'm expecting Christmas? I'm expecting this is me. But you're singing row, row, row your boat. Yeah, I know. But dude, it doesn't work that way. If you want a new song, you have to sing a new song. Oh, so I can't keep, no, you can't keep singing the same old song expecting, it doesn't work that way. Change the note, change the tune, change the lyrics, change the melody, change the harmony. But I'm used to this, I know. But if you want a new song, you have to change it. You want a new life, you have to change it. Number three, identify what role, take a pause, because this is going to be a rough one. Identify what role you play in the stories of others. See, it's easy for us to talk about, I can remember the role that my mother as alcoholic played in my life. I can remember the role of my father as alcoholic in my life. I can remember the role of my older brothers and cousins and teachers and friends. I can remember their role and their effect on me. But how often do I sit and think about how I and my story, my life, affected or affects them? See, we don't exist in isolation. There is no such thing as, let us sit down and read the story of Dorothy. Dorothy, all by herself. There's no Toto, there's no Scarecrow, no Tin Man, no Lion, no Wizard, no Witch, no Glinda, no Munchkins. It's just Dorothy. And she's just chilling. That's a real short story. That's what, you might as well just say Dorothy, period. Because even if it's a one-woman show, the story of Dorothy, and she's telling the story about, so look, check this out. There was a time I went to Oz and I met some friends. She's recounting the story. And in her telling of the story, she's bringing the characters into the narration. She is giving them life in the telling of the story. So we don't happen all by our lonesome on an island by ourselves. I don't make my own clothes. So even though I don't know who stitched this, their story impacts me. And when I wear the garment that they created, I now impact them because I am showing their finery. I am demonstrating and reciprocity. They made it, I bought it. They get whatever monetary thing. Like, there's reciprocity in all of our stories. Because once again, if God is all there is, God is life itself, what part of God can exist outside of or separate from another part of God? Like, can God in Italy right now exist completely all by itself? By itself. No. Voltaire said, God is a circle whose circumference is nowhere, whose center is everywhere. The very center of God is everywhere, everything and everyone. So how do we interact with God in every form? Poet John Donne said, no man is an island. We are all interconnected as people. He said, with God, and I'm saying as God, because this web of life is God, and all of the threads are God, and all of us in the tapestry of life are God living itself. We are all intimately, intricately, eternally connected. But am I willing to think about and ponder how my life affects you, how my words affect you, how my story affects you? Because if I'm not willing to think about that, then I am going to be more likely to oppress you or depress you, right? If I don't really care about what I want matters more than anything else in the world, I don't care what you think or what you say, then I am going to be likely to oppress you, depress you, and suppress you because I don't care. It's all about I, me, and it never becomes we. That which is God is about the collective, the one showing up as the many. So if we are going to actually live this thing called life, then we must be mindful of and practice and engage in the process of, which means I cannot truly love you if I do not truly love me. Self-care. How am I tending to this life that is God, this temple that is God, this mind that is God? In religious science, it is said there is only one mind and that mind is God. There is only one life and that life is God. Am I willing to really go there and say, then if this life is God living itself, then it is worthy of, my life is worthy of praise. My life is worthy of honoring, and so is yours. So is that person in the subway who clearly hasn't bathed in 6 months. God in the flesh. But if I turn my nose up and simply walk away, then am I not disrespecting an incarnation, the temple of God? Or is it more in alignment for me to say, as I walk past, knowing that God is all there is, I bless this incarnation of God, that this individual recognizes his or her or their own divine spiritual magnificence, and they too recognize and know that they are the infinite I am that is ever becoming and breathing itself as them. Do I bless them or do I curse them? Because I don't like the smell. Did I not say, let us embrace? What do I choose to experience? There is this odor, but I choose to experience godliness in all aspects, then even in the midst of an odor. Let me embrace. Let me recognize, let me know, let me affirm, let me declare the truth for anyone and everyone who may not know this truth. Mark Nepo said, in many ways, our stories are part of one story. Our pain is part of one pain. Our surprise at the beauty and the fragility of life is part of one chorus of awe. Am I willing to stand in awe of this chorus, of this harmony and this beauty that is God expressing? Or is it easier for me? Because keep in mind, the scripture said you have the power of life and death in your tongue. You can curse and be non-life affirming or life denying, or you can speak words that are life affirming, a blessing. Which do I choose? Because we get to choose. Number four, identify the practices that will form the foundation upon which you are building this bold new life, this life of self, radical self-care, this life of joy, this life of brilliance, even in the midst of whatever this is, chaos, confusion, disparity, poverty. Because if we don't recognize this, if we don't acknowledge this, for example, suppose you're a doctor in the ER and a patient comes in with a bullet shot to the shoulder and you simply say, up, I do not recognize or see or acknowledge injury. There is only God, and God is infinite health and well-being. And I turn away from the effect. I turn away from the condition. What happens to the patient? Do they not bleed out? Do they not die of their injuries? See, when we are so heavenly minded that we refuse to acknowledge that there are those who right now are experiencing lack, limitation, scarcity, fear, depression, anxiety, racism, sexism, homophobia. We are so heavenly minded that it's all an illusion. Well, if it's all an illusion and they're living based upon the illusion, do I not also have a responsibility to be the one that says, ha-ha, Doug Henning, ha-ha, David Copperfield, and move the curtain so we see the reality behind the trick? Is it not my responsibility to bring truth to the masses in whatever way possible? But I can't do that if I'm not practicing. If I'm not laying the foundation for my life, for example, as a practice, forgiveness, do I forgive? Do I forgive in a radical manner? Keeping in mind that forgiveness is not about the other person. Forgiveness is about being bit by a snake, having the venom in your body, and forgiveness is getting the venom out of your body. You can dice the snake up. You can burn the snake. You can throw it 100 miles away, but the venom is already within. Forgiveness is getting the venom out of you. Active and conscious prayer, not just praying for the sake of reciting mantras and saying beautiful words, but being active and conscious. Our words, our thoughts, our prayers, and we are always praying. Always praying. So when I walk past that homeless person, or when I walk past this person who I don't agree with their political affiliation, and I curse them, you, our thoughts are prayers and we are always praying, then what did I just pray into existence? I prayed more separation, more contention, more venom into life. Is that really what I want to pray into? Mindful communication. Be more effective and appropriate in our lexicon of how we speak. For example, we often say, this is negative or that is positive, and I'm not saying, and I'm not saying, for linguistic convenience, it serves a purpose, but it is also very, very, very important to recognize yin yang, the negative energy of yin is the feminine, the intuitive. And if I claim that as the enemy, then I am claiming the feminine and the intuitive as the enemy. That is me buying into the patriarchal delusion that says women are less than. That is saying this woo 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 is less than. We want concrete and tangible. The negative is not bad. So let us be mindful of the words that we use and recognizing that these words share an energy. Once again, for linguistic convenience, it serves a purpose. But be mindful that back of that, what do I really believe about that which is negative? Have holy confrontation and be blessed in your boundaries. Holy confrontation, sometimes we have to call a thing and confront rather than enable. Sometimes we have to be clear on our boundaries. because people will try to gaslight. People will try to spiritually bypass. And if we are not clear on our boundaries, then we become the victim of that abuse. No more. Overall, radical self-care is recognizing that you are divine, you are God in the flesh, you are holy, you are sacred, and you deserve love, joy, power, presence, oneness. You deserve this. Not just you desire it, you deserve it. Because how could God deserve anything less than the infinite goodness of God? Did Yeshua not say, I came that you may have life and have it more abundantly? He didn't just say, so look, I came that you may have life abundantly. I came that you may have life and have it more abundantly. But we must do the work. In other words, step five of this five-part living a bold new life thing is live it, be it, and do it. There comes a time to talk about it and theorize about it, to conceptualize about it. Like it's writing a song. I can have the song in my head, but until I give voice, whether I hum it, whether I strum it, whether I play it or drum it, until I give it expression, it's not a song for real. But the moment I now live it, the moment I sing it, drum it, now I am experiencing it. I am being it. Keeping in mind, so let's go back for a second. The song that we started with, one of the lyrics said, I'm not scared to be seen and I make no apologies. Radical self-care is about living your truth in an audacious, magnificent, and powerful way. There are going to be people who say, who do you think you are? And turn that light down. No. See, like, you know that song, this little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Well, check this out. You know that light? It is not little. This godly light of mine, I now let it shine. This magnificent light of mine, I now let it shine. This universal light of spirit, I boldly and courageously, audaciously let it shine. Even when this thing called darkness wants to show up, I say, in the words of Charles Fillmore, I fairly sizzle. I burn with zeal and enthusiasm. And I spring forth with a mighty faith, because faith without works is dead. And I spring forth with a mighty faith to do, not to think, to do the things that ought to be done by me. And we breathe and recognize in this infinite moment that which God is breathing, living, and being exactly who and what you are. And we breathe and take this in. We breathe in preparation for Reverend Britt, who is now going to anchor this with a meditation. We breathe in gratitude. We breathe. We set the space. Blessings and namaste.
Breathe. We breathe. We breathe into that sacred space. We breathe into this sacred space. Just allow yourself to relax as you fully, consciously bring this breath in, this sacred breath of God. Bring it fully into your body. And let it fall wherever it may. Is there a space of tension, stress? Just let your shoulders fall away from your ears a little bit more with each breath. I spring forth with a mighty faith And my faith keeps me focused on God. Raymond reminded us that our thoughts are prayers. Through my faith, I align my thoughts with the divine. I believe in the truth that sets me free. As I continue to experience my unique story, marching to the beat of my own drum, I remember that I get to do this thing called life. Even in the midst of grief, disappointment, tragedy, I get to continue this thing called life. We are all eternally connected. Eternally connected. We are never walking alone. In our oneness, whatever we might ever be walking through, we are never alone. Whatever I am ever walking through, I am never alone.
Keep your chin up high and don't be afraid of the dark. At the end of the storm is a golden sky and the sweet silver song of a lark. Walk on through the wind, walk on through the rain, though your dreams be tossed and blown, walk on There are angels beside you.